Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by contributors from community radio stations across Canada. This episode of Groundwire was produced at CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on the traditional unceded territory of the Ganyatgahaga. On this episode of Groundwire...
Beaumont right now is the epicenter, it's the ground zero for gentrification and park extension.
Canada is supporting their interests, and their interest is not the poor people. The interest is for the multinational corporation.
We were preparing to really respond to this issue because this is not an acceptable move on behalf of a government that claims to be for the people.
But first, here are the headlines. Catherine Fisher of CJLY in Sinek's territory in BC brings us our first headline.
The first provincially founded overdose prevention site in the Kootenay boundary region of British Columbia has opened in Nelson as a one-year pilot project run by the AIDS Network, Kootenay Outreach and Support Society, or ANCHORS. Nelson is a small city of just 10,000 people and one of the smallest communities in BC to have an overdose prevention site. In 2018, there were 21 fentanyl-related deaths in the East Kootenay and Kootenay boundary regions from January to November. According to a report from the BC Coroner's Service, there were 14 other drug overdose deaths. Overdose deaths in southern BC have increased by a factor of 10 since 2008. Currently, the site is serving about 8 people a day, and this number is expected to increase. ANCHORS also offers drug potency checks, education on safe injection, inhalation, HIV and hepatitis C, as well as a needle exchange program. They provide information for people who are or may be at risk of being homeless, as Nelson was recently demonstrated to have the highest per capita homeless population in BC. Since this is a rural area and there's need for these services in other small surrounding communities, ANCHORS offers resources and support to these through community partners. There were 1,489 suspected drug overdose deaths in the province of BC in 2018, with the largest number in the coastal communities of Vancouver, Surrey, and Victoria. Overdose prevention sites are managed by health authorities in cooperation with community partners across the province. They provide on-site monitoring for people at risk of overdose and allow for rapid response when an overdose occurs. While supervised consumption services require municipalities to seek an exemption from federal drug laws, the same process is not required to establish an overdose prevention site.
The following headline comes to us from David Fort, a programmer with CHMR in St. John's, about the role of a Manitoba-headquartered corporation's involvement in a hydro mega development in Labrador.
Starting Monday, February 18th, the Commission of Inquiry respecting the Muskrat Falls project commences with Phase 2 of its investigation into significant cost overruns in the construction of Nalcor's planned hydro megadam project. Manitoba Hydro has gotten press attention as a consultant in this inquiry. There is widespread awareness of Manitoba Hydro's industrial history and their recent development of the Kiask Megadam. Less is known about their subsidiary, Manitoba Hydro International, which is involved in an infrastructure project impacting the lives of thousands in faraway Labrador. The Muskrat Falls Megadam project on the lower Churchill River currently threatens Labrador residents with flooding, methylmercury poisoning, on top of the fact it has more than doubled initial cost estimates of $6.2 billion to $12.7 billion and rising. Manitoba Hydro signed off on a conditional review in 2012, helping move the Muskrat Falls Dam forward. Here's a statement on October 30th of 2012 from Minister of Natural Resources at the time, Jerome Kennedy.
Manitoba Hydro International's analysis, which assessed the project's feasibility and financial merit, reaffirms that Muskrat Falls is the lowest cost option for electricity generation. The analysis shows that Muskrat Falls with the Labrador Island Link will improve the reliability of the existing electricity system and stabilize electricity rates.
Manitoba Hydro International copyrighted technologies are currently embedded in the Emera Maritime Link, which is designed to import Muskrat Falls hydropower over two ocean crossings from Labrador to Newfoundland and into Nova Scotia.
That was Dave Fort with our second headline on behalf of CHMR. CHMR 93.5 FM broadcasts from the territories of the Beothuk and Mi'kmaq peoples. The Ontario government, under Doug Ford, has introduced dramatic cuts to education in the province. The cuts will effectively force all post-secondary institutions to cut their tuition by 10%. It will also eliminate free education through OSAP grants to lower-income families, allow students to opt out of student services fees, and limit students' ability to declare independent status. CJRU, the Ryerson Scope, brings us footage from a protest against the cuts held on January 25th the second in a series of demonstrations in Toronto and one of several across Ontario. CJRU broadcast from the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee, the Métis, and most recently, the territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation.
Education is a right!
It's just shocking. I think it's going to make the student experience more geared towards people who already have access to all of those things, like outside the campus, and it's going to reduce access on campus for people who don't have easy access to that stuff.
So we're here with the Canadian Federation of Students, as well as March for Education, and a number of students here to really tell the government that they picked a fight with the wrong people, and students are not going to give up on the fact that they've cut major grants that students rely on to go to post-secondary education.
So how did you feel when you had first heard about the cuts that were happening?
I can't say that I was surprised because of the Auditor General's report in December. We knew that the government sort of left the door open for cuts to OSAP, but with that being said, we were preparing to really respond to this issue because this is not an acceptable move on behalf of a government that claims to be for the people.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this. You are listening to Groundwire Community Radio News, available online at groundwirenews.ca. Heard Nevatara by Elisa P. Isaac. You're listening to Groundwire Community Radio News, broadcasting from coast to coast to coast. Now here are our features for the hour. On behalf of Groundwire, CKUW 95.9 in Winnipeg and CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria bring us our first feature, footage from local hands-off Venezuela protests. The Canadian government, along with the United States and a number of Latin American and European nations, recognize Juan Guaido, president of the opposition-controlled National Assembly in Venezuela, as the interim president of the Latin American country. The decision was not well received by a number of social justice groups in Canada. A few centers across Canada staged demonstrations critical of Canada's position. Michael Walsh of CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg brings us audio from the demonstration outside the U.S. consulate on a cold Sunday afternoon, immediately following Guaido's assertion of his presidential role.
Final say, voters are the CIA!
Canada is encouraging a coup in Venezuela because the man they are supporting has already asked the army to come out and support him instead of the constitutional government of Venezuela.
We're part of a newly formed group called Students for Global Justice, and this isn't leading to the kind of world that we want to live in. They don't have the power that they did, but they think they do, and they're going to try and do whatever manipulations and sabotage to try and foist this person that I think a poll said 80% of Venezuelans hadn't heard of last week as the so-called legitimate president this week. He's the head of a body that has a 70% disapproval rate, according to the same type of opposition pollsters, and now he says he's the legitimate president of an entire country.
My name is German, Aburto, and the reason why I'm here is because
Canada and
I went through this in Chile,
people of Canada,
1973,
as well as
everybody
knows,
Allende was thrown out from the government by the coup. And now they're trying to do in Venezuela for the same purpose,
class,
the same reason.
People of Canada,
and I don't want the Venezuelan people going through to what for what I went through. For what I went through. That's the reason why I'm here.
Can you share a little bit about what you went through?
I spent 1 year in a concentration camp just to believe in happiness to the majority of the people of Chile. I was a union representative, and they charged me with a ridiculous charge, like I went to a kidnapping diplomatic in order to create an external problem with the Chilean junta. And I spent 11 and a half months in the concentration camp north of Chile. And then I came to Canada in 1975. Canada is supporting their interests. And their interest is not the poor people. The interest is for the multinational corporation miners. They exploiting our resources. I would like to see Canada being, in Spanish we said, a blanca paloma, a white dwarf. Before, Canada was loved in the entire world. Anybody who went to any places, Canadian, they were welcome. Today, it start losing that. So please, go back to those years to see if Canada stay away from any other interference detector chip.
My name's Siegfried. You know, I was saying to a friend here before, I'm so disappointed and saddened by my country's government. You know, Freeland is reported as having talked to this person, this self-proclaimed something or other, 2 weeks ago. So this is a coup in planning. It's very coordinated. Politically, I see movement in the NDP that I'm really pleased about. It seems to be the minority, but it did force the leader to sort of restate and clarify his position over the day on Thursday, and that was good. CBC interviewed somebody who indicated, well, he fled Venezuela 30 years ago. Well, you know, 30 years ago was pre the Bolivarian Revolution, is pre-Chavez. So why did he flee then? I mean, the economic dislocations, the outright racism was in play then. And the Bolivarian Revolution set the racism straight, and the people finally gained some semblance of control.
Here's Chris Cook reporting from the Parliament Building in Victoria on February 2nd.
My name is Tyson Strandland. I'm the organizer for the Young Communist League. We're hosting a rally today along with some representatives from CUPE in solidarity with the Venezuelan people, their right to self-determination. We're here to say no to the economic warfare and sanctions imposed by Canada and a handful of other Western governments seeking to undermine Venezuelan democracy. We're here to tell Venezuelans that working-class Canadians stand with Venezuela.
I'm standing here with the former Green Party of Canada leader, Dr. Joan Russo.
I was going through all the recent elections in Latin America because in 2014 when I was in El Salvador, they used the destabilization of Venezuela to promote the right wing, saying we don't want our country to be like Venezuela. Through all the elections that took place in the last 2 years, they were using Venezuela.
What's happening in Venezuela is identical to what happened in Chile, only far more blatant still.
My name is Rodrigo Garcia from the Faramundo Martí National Liberation Front of El Salvador. We're glad to see all of you here today, once again, saying no to the U.S. intervention in our businesses around the world. We who have experienced what this intervention means can tell you, as our friend said, that we are well aware that the United States has no one's interest at heart but those of corporations. They have no interest whatsoever to peace, democracy. All those words to them mean nothing but excuses to come and take what it doesn't belong to them.
Thanks to Michael Welch and Chris Cook for that footage. CKUW broadcasts on the occupied Anishinaabe Akin, the homeland of the Métis Nation, and the traditional territory of the Nahiyawak and the Nakota. CFUV broadcast from Coast Salish territories. Our next two features come from CKUT, broadcasting on Jajage, or so-called Montreal. On Sunday, February 10th, Montreal anti-racist organizers gathered at CETA Community Center in Little Burgundy for a public demonstration against racism. They met following the Quebec government's proposal of Bill 9 on February 7th. If passed, Bill 9 will effectively terminate a backlog of 18,000 immigration applications and revise existing immigration policy to reflect so-called Quebec values. Organizers attending the event spoke to CKUT's News Collective about the bill.
What is your opinion on Bill 9?
I think it's very, very dangerous right now because we're talking about 18,000 demands that are systematically rejected, affecting upward to 50,000 people. And these people have history. These people are coming from a long way to come to Canada to find a better life. A lot of them are inside Canada. A lot of them are people around me. A lot of them are people around you. And they're people we know that are going to lose everything just because of a... It's a racist law because we know why they want to do this. They want to revoke all these demands so they can force people to do a new demand, which will require to pass their so-called test of values, which we don't even know the content yet. So, yeah, I think it's quite problematic. And I stand to lose friends from this. So I'm quite angry about it.
Did you... expect this blatant an attack on immigrants from the CAQ before the election and since the events of October, or since the October march?
It's a good question. To be honest, I'm not sure what they're doing is legal. But I'm not quite surprised because the day after the election, they started proposing measures against immigrants that were openly illegal. Saying publicly that when confronted, they say publicly that, oh, it's illegal, we're gonna make it legal. So they don't care about the law anyway. So they will rewrite the law if they need to. But I suspect in this case it's gonna go to the court. But in the meantime, it will affect a lot of people. So maybe the people will win in 10 years, but they'll win in 10 years while they are already deported.
I am presently speaking with...
France André from the Comité d'Action des Personnes Sans Statut, which is Action Committee on Non-Status People.
We were interested in knowing your reaction to the CAQ's announcement of Bill 9.
Well, I think Mr. Legault is trying to show that actually he's a man of his word. And I think actually he's doing even more harm than showing that Quebec and Canada is a welcoming place. You cannot tell me there's people who've been waiting for years. 18,000 files, which represent close to 54,000 people, have been waiting for a long time to be fully integrated. And some of them are already working here. So this is not fair. They're where they have to restart again, a process that may take years again. There's no proof whatsoever that his government will be as efficient as they would want to be to actually go through all those files. So would we see new people actually going forward when the one who's been around for years waiting to be neglected? That's not right. That's not right. This is not the Canada I think we should be. This is not the Quebec I thought we were. So, and that has to stop.
Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
Well, I want the listener to know that there is right now racism appealing into our immigration system, especially at the federal level. We have people that are being deported, being myself from Haiti, and with the Haitian that came in 2017, they are the group that are being deported the fastest. And just to show that Canada is not a place where you're coming with a free ticket, like you're going into the movie, the government of Canada, because it's an electoral year, are showing that, you know, they are not as open, that we're like, they have a selection for the process. It's not everyone they would let come in into Canada. And the groups that are being the most deported right now are from Haiti and Nigeria. And to me, that's racism.
On Tuesday, February 5th, the Borough Council of Park Extension in Montreal decided to postpone the demolition of two buildings in the neighborhood. This came after dozens of Park X residents gathered to voice their concern about housing in the neighborhood. Back in November, the borough authorized the demolition of two industrial buildings located on Beaumont. Many are worried that these new units catering to students are contributing to gentrification. Residents and advocates argue that there should be more investment in social housing in one of Canada's poorest neighborhoods. CKUT's Lizzie Chatham brings voices from the demonstration held against gentrification in Park X on February 5th.
Socialism for all, housing for all, yeah. Especially in places like Park X. Honestly, it's been a working class neighborhood for 100 years since the very beginning. The nice thing about Park X is people are willing to work together across all the divisions that might seem so important around language or around culture, but we're the same class. If you look at the breakdown of the neighborhood by quintile, five quintiles, everybody in Park X is in the bottom quintile. There's not even one person in quintile number four. No, enough with the condos. Nobody can afford them. They're tiny. They're one and a half. We've seen it already. Wonderful old buildings like the Empire Theater one block away here that was gutted, that was turned into 21 tiny little one and a half so you can barely turn around in. But lots of parents bought it, of UDM students. They rent it out to their kids, and then it becomes an investment. I'm happy to invite Mr. Rahman.
I'm a tenant of Park Extension. I'm here living for last 12 years. I have four children, and for last 7 and 8 years, I'm suffering a lot as a tenant. Cockroaches and all the issues, no reparation, no respect to me. When I used to complain for any problem, they never listened to me. They ensured that even I call for a problem and then give me the message that, okay, you call, but you will not do nothing.
So today, what are we asking for concretely? We've got two buildings on Bomo that are up for demolition. They're perfectly fine buildings. One of them just got renovated. But there's a new owner, who's got a conditional offer of sale. If he can get a permit for demolition, he's going to buy these two buildings. He's going to go as high as he can, which is four stories high. And then it's going to be very small, very expensive condo-style apartments, as he says directly to us, four students on the top three units. This doesn't do anything for the neighborhood. It just drives up rents, and it actually makes it worse for everybody who's left in the neighborhood. Beaumont right now is the epicenter, is the ground zero for gentrification in Park Extension. I grew up in Myland. I saw it with Bernard Street and Saint-Gatard. When Ubisoft came in, everything changed. And right now, Invest in Montréal is going to have that Ubisoft effect on Beaumont, and it's just going to come further north. The rents are going up starting in the south. People are being evicted. The cap, we have a mapping project. We've got 30 people since this summer on a map who've been either pushed out by shady repossessions just since this summer. And those are just ones we know about. What we need to do is get a vote from the five councillors today against the permit for demolition. Not only that, we need them to take the $4.25 million that the city put aside for a project that never came to light at the old homemade bakery. They need to take that money and start acquiring land. They need to acquire Plaza Hutchison. They need to acquire those two buildings that are for sale on Beaumont. And we need to start protecting the most vulnerable tenants in Montreal who are right here in Park Extension.
On traditional, unceded Ganigahaga territory, that was CKUT's news collective. For a community radio report, CKUW contributor Michael Welch brings us a portrait of his station's Fun Drive Week, which happens to be taking place the same year the university broadcaster marks 20 years on the FM dial.
CKUW Fun Drive 2019 launched on Friday, February 8th. The radio station located at the University of Winnipeg existed as a closed circuit network on the campus from 1963 to 1999. That was the year when CKUW truly became a campus community broadcaster. Groundwire had a chance to speak to a couple of members of the CKUW community who recall the transition to FM and the challenges of two decades of Fun Drive.
I'm Rob Schmidt. I'm the station manager of CKUW 95.9 FM.
I am curious about some of the challenges that came about in that transition from closed circuit to going on the FM band.
The biggest challenge for the station really was just getting prepared and sort of setting the groundwork. So making sure we had enough money, making sure we had a budget where we could sustain operations, you know. But then there was a lot of work really trying to find volunteers. I sat around with a soldering gun and wired up quite a bit of the studio ourselves just to save some money, you know, at the time. So it was a lot of little things that went together to make it launch FM. There was like a slight broadening of the horizons, but the quality level of what was actually being produced went way up just because of the prestige of FM and bringing in that expertise from the community as well made a huge difference.
How did you initially secure the all of the expenses that go with being on FM?
So there had been a student levy in place for a number of years that had been saving up towards FM. The other part of it was we said, well, look, we're going to have some advertising and we're going to do fundraising. We're going to do Fund Drive. And one of the things that surprised everyone the most was in our first year of Fund Drive, we set a goal of $15,000, and we hit that on the Tuesday of Fund Drive. It made us all realize that, you know, we had the right idea, we were doing the right thing, we were on the right track, and that the community was going to be there to support this vision. And they've been there every year ever since.
All right, you are listening to some very special programming on CKUW 95.9 FM. This is Fun Drive 2019.
So my name is Kemlyn.
And I am Jen, and I do a show with my sister who was just there.
And our show is called Checks Up. I was actually a student here at University of Winnipeg and on student council when we actually did the referendum about going FM. Our show started under a different name, maybe about a year and a half or 2 years before we actually went FM.
I do remember, you know, kind of the excitement and the maybe the scare factor of, oh no, all these people are going to be able to hear us, that I can't just walk down to the cafeteria and look at them. There are lots of people that I don't know. So that probably changed our focus a little bit.
Do you have a particular Fun Drive memory that stands out?
Okay, I do. So when Kamlyn was away, she was in Tanzania. That first Fun Drive when she was away, a lot of people all of a sudden started saying, Tanzania! And for years afterwards, people would keep saying it during Fun Drive. And I kept asking them, why are you saying this? I don't know, it's Fun Drive. It was just a thing. I think I may have said that you were in Tanzania and that just kind of caught on. And one last thing that I do really miss, Ted's camel hat.
Oh, yeah. And also some seriously cheesy prizes. Like the, what was his name? The doll?
Master P doll.
That's right. And there was that really awful rat. Oh, man.
I want to say, though, on a more serious note, I do have memories of just really fun shows too, like things outside mm-hmm. of the station, and that continues. So, yeah. Those are all great memories that I'll always take with me, and just meeting volunteers throughout, like people that I'd never meet because their shows are at 3 a.m. on Wednesdays, and I'm not here.
We've had house concerts, we've had these live performances in studio that are all just people who really care about the station. And they understand how important it is, and they're excited to contribute and share some of their art and their music, and that's always fun. That's my favorite part.
Fun Drive officially ends on Friday, February 15th. The goal this year is $60,000. From Winnipeg on Occupied Anishinaabe Gakin, the homeland of the Métis and the historical territory of the Nahiowak and the Nakota, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, on the traditional territory of the Ganegahaga. Headlines this week were contributed by David Fort, Catherine Fisher, and Elizabeth Boyd. We also thank Michael Welch, Chris Cook, Rian Adamian, Josh Demokakos, and Lizzie Chatham for their contributions. Music this week was from Melissa P. Isaac. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station, or download at groundwirenews.ca. Thanks for tuning in.